Welcome, everyone, to Strategic Leadership with Paul Gilbert. This is a podcast that focuses on these ideas of leadership and strategy that are important for any and every organization to move forward. So if you have a goal, an objective, if you have a company, a government department, a nonprofit that's making the world better in any kind of way, you want to use the leverage of your group to get where you need to go. And to do that effectively, you need to use these skills of leadership and management. So today, really, really honored to have a wonderful friend of mine, Tom O'Rourke, join us to talk a little bit about the differences between management and leadership and how they affect an organization and how we move forward. So a bit about Tom. He is a professor of practice at Clemson University Department of Park and Recreation and Tourism Management. He's the former executive director of the Charleston County Park and Recreation Commission, a really remarkable park agency, regional park agency in the Charleston area, that they do everything and they do it really well. I've been all over their system. He's a consultant with Brandstetter Carroll. He is a city council member with the city of Mount Pleasant, South Carolina. And Tom is an influencer. He is out there talking at conferences, networking like no one's business, being provocative, asking questions, pushing people to think about stuff like they've never thought of before. So Tom, welcome.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here. I love the podcast, love what you're doing, and I know a lot of people are going to really benefit from it.
Great. So the subject today, you've been in all kinds of leadership and management positions. For many people, the difference is a little fuzzy. Do you see a difference between leadership and management? And if so, like, what do you think is like core to difference?
There is a huge difference. I believe leadership is pretty much charting the course, knowing where you want to eventually end up and why. More importantly, why? What is it changing? Management are the things that you do to get you there. And honestly, I know managers that really aren't great leaders. And I know leaders like myself that are not great managers. And I think that's okay. But I don't think you can get to the finish line unless you have competency at both. So, but I do believe strongly that there is a big, big difference. Yes.
So one of my little pet peeves in this area is that there are a lot of memes out there on social media that tend to put down management. So leadership is all good, management's all bad. And I always cringe a little bit when I see those memes because they're trying to deliver the right message that we need more leadership, but you can't do that while putting down management because I think...
Don't take it too personal, Paul.
Yeah.
Don't take it too personal. Those are meant to be laughed at. And if you think about it, somebody in management is making those things up. And I think that a lot of those, sometimes you just have to look back at and laugh. I think it's like, I remember when the TV show Parks and Recreation came out and the whole entire profession was like going crazy saying, no, they're disrespecting us. Like, lighten up, you know, stop it. It's a TV show. So yeah, I've seen those too. And a lot of them I've laughed at, but anybody that's in the arena certainly understands how important it is.
Speaking of the TV show Park and Recreation, you and I have been around quite a bit and seen a lot of different organizations in our field. And there are some that are not very far off the mark.
You are right. You are so right.
It also doesn't reflect the totality of the field and some amazing leaders and amazing organizations that are doing good. But there are others out there.
There are others. Yes, good point.
That'll be another episode.
Yes.
So I guess part of my point there was just to give respect to the field of management. Because here's my thought, is that you can lead a well-managed organization, but you can't really lead an organization where right. the wheels are falling off the cart. And, yeah. and so there's sort of like a hierarchy of needs. And when you start a, you know, looking at an organization, you need to say, does it function? And, you know, we've all seen organizations, maybe even been part of them, where elements of them did not function at all. And what they needed was some really good management. So I don't want to take anything away from that. And one of the pieces I want us to kind of focus on a little bit is the work done by John Kotter from the Harvard Business School on the differences. And he's good on this point too. He does not put down management at all. But he points out a difference and points out that in his view, and I think in mine too, probably most organizations are overmanaged and underled. So what do you think about that, Tom? Have you seen and experienced that?
I have. I lived that actually in my last job, where it was an interesting situation. In fact, I was a director of two departments. The first one was the Mount Pleasant Recreation Department in the city that I live in. And when I got that job, I wanted it really bad. I had 0 days experience in the park and recreation field. I knew a lot of people. A lot of people knew me on a favorable basis. I had a degree in parks and recreation. My father was a recreation director for a long time, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I applied for one of the top jobs in the whole state. And I got it. And so not only was I being held under a microscope by the people that I work for, the entire state and all the many people that applied for that job that didn't get it were wondering, who is this guy? So what I had to make sure I didn't do was to walk into a situation where I really didn't understand the system, the management, to people that were really good at it. And I had to take a step back, and together, we had to decide whose roles were going to be what roles. And I actually stayed away from a lot of the management. I trusted great managers to manage. When I got to Charleston County Parks, it was like even more, because the managers there, holy heck, they could do anything where I could do nothing as it related to individual tasks. So I made sure, and what helped me, I think, in my position was I didn't pretend like I could. I didn't pretend like, let me tell you how this is going to be done, let me tell you how we're going to do it. Never zero did I do that. And so what I got the opportunity to do is learn management through great managers and trust. And I think as we're looking at two slides, leadership and management, I think you can learn a lot about leadership through efficient management. And so I knew what my personality was. I knew what I was good at. I knew what I wasn't good at. But what I think helped me in each of those organizations was that I was a student of the profession and what we did based on the great managers that were there. But I'll tell you, I haven't been working at a lot of places, but I would put the management of the Charleston County Park System up against just about anybody. I mean, they're amazing what they do there.
Tom, I'm very familiar with your system, and I know many of the leaders in that system, and I will agree. They are absolutely top-notch. Yes. You know, among the best in the industry. So
yes. And when all the accolades you give about me, because of them. And that's not self-deprecating. That's nothing. I walked in and showed them where we were going, but I certainly never took the wheel of the car. They steered it and they drove it. That's why I worked.
So Tom, we have perhaps some similarities in how we came into our position. I had not worked my way up through the ranks in park and recreation. I came from running a nonprofit that did some very similar sorts of things and was on the board of Nova Parks and then was hired as the executive director. So I came in through a different door, just kind of like you came in through a different door, but right. But we're uncommon. So in many ways,
yes.
but in the way that I see most people who get to the top of the organizational ladder get there by advancing within that organization from one role to the next. So they are management experts by the time they get into the role to that sort of designated as leadership. And I think that can actually be a detriment sometimes because you have to put down some of the things that you actually are really, really, really good at and like doing. And I know I've had to do that occasionally, and it's always difficult because you love those things.
You're right. The thing that's important, though, one of the things that concerned me initially when I took the job at Charleston County Parks was we had a tremendous supply of people that were all great. And the only way they were going to get more prestige or more money or whatever was by taking their boss's job. And their boss was never going to leave. So the challenge was, how do we increase their pay and show the value of the positions that they're in and the work that they're really doing so that they can then feel pretty good about it is what they are doing. And that was difficult, but, you know, our turnover was, nobody left, you know, everybody stayed, but I thought it was really important to point out, like I said, everybody's role in what they were doing and the unbelievable importance of it. But, you know, it's the managing of those facilities and those parks that make it great when you have that many people coming to visit.
So pointing out that role and what they're doing, it reminds me of a study that I read, I think it was in Harvard Business Review a few years ago, where it talked about what motivated employees. And they looked at the thing that you always look at is compensation and benefits and work environment, and whatever. They found out that really wasn't the driver. Right. And the driver was a sense of progress where they could go home at the end of the day and feel like the work they did made a difference. And they understood what that difference was and could define it and understand it. And it sounds like what you were doing as a leader was helping them to find that sense of progress.
Yeah. Well, I read that article.
Yeah.
And there was one thing in there that I loved that I tried to keep forefront in my mind often. Is that what employees want, whether they're in management or leadership, is for their supervisor to make them better. Make me better. Push me. Challenge me. Give me things that are really hard. And then the good managers and the good leaders recognize that, let everybody know it was them that did it, and go from there. So yeah, that was a great article. I'd recommend that for everybody.
So let's jump into a little bit of this content from John Cotter. So he has in one axis that leaders are there to motivate and inspire, to energize, empower, all that good stuff. And this is sort of in the personnel management area. And managers are there to control and problem solve and generate solutions and take corrective actions. So what's the difference in those and where should you be as an organizational leader in addressing those personnel related drivers?
Well, I think you better recognize the importance of both of those. Self-confidence and giving people confidence might be the most important thing that we need to do as managers and leaders. If it's so easy to recognize people for doing the great work that they do, It really is. And I don't know if any of us understand how far that goes to an employee when you take the time to be there to say, wow, I just heard what you did in so-and-so, and that was really great. So the leader being that motivator, being the one that's out there and making you feel good about yourself, instilling confidence, that's what you've got to do. So both of those are important. But honestly, you know, I talked about my goals and everything. You know, I start off with, why am I on this earth? I that's why I start. What am I doing here? And honestly, it's to inspire. It's to inspire people in this profession about how great this profession is and the real things that we could be doing to change this entire world. And I know that sounds so corny. I honestly believe it. Oh. We can fix everything in this profession.
I know you, Tom. I know that you passionately believe that. And I agree. I am sometimes a little concerned with how do we do it. You can do anything, but can you do everything? That's sometimes my concern.
You know what, though, Paul? Okay, so you, Paul Gilbert, can't do everything. But imagine if you create in your organization 10 Paul Gilberts that then create 10 more and then turn that into the community. That's how you do it. It's knowing those traits and the things that need to change. But we're believers. I know it sounded a little spiritual here, but we are made of believers. And if we believe and we can teach 5 more to believe and they can teach 5 more to believe, it keeps going.
Wow. You know what we should really do? We should create a podcast on leadership and strategy. Let's think about doing that.
Boy, that's a really good idea.
So here's the way I would approach this difference in roles in personnel management between what Cotter talks about with leaders and managers is that while you are managing, because there's a lot of personnel management as you move up the chart, and you have people that you supervise and you have to do annual reviews and set goals and mentor and discuss and be there for them as you go along, that while you're doing the administrative pieces, which are many, to not forget the leadership pieces of injecting it with inspiration and vision and empowerment. And one of the key things is aligning skills. So there's a job description and there's a person. Well, that person and that job description are not the same thing. Find out what that person is passionate about. And within the general, and I use the term general very loosely, general confines of that job, let them gravitate towards the things that they actually are passionate about, are great at doing, and will make their day better. So we all have to spend time doing things that we really don't want to. There is no perfect job. So you take that and you say, okay, I'm going to spend 20, 30, 50% of my time doing things that are mundane but have to be done. And I'm going to take the other time and focus on the things that should be done that I am passionate about. And if you could do that, you're motivating that employee. They all of a sudden have the best job they've ever had. And boom, you're moving forward.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. You gotta inspire the people. And, you know, sometimes I feel like, you know, I started off as a basketball coach and I live my life as a basketball player. And here's the way that hierarchy works. If you're not playing well, they pull you out and put somebody else in. If you are playing well, you stay in. And sometimes I feel kind of bad But if you're with me and you don't get it, and you're never going to get it, I substitute. I want to find somebody else that gets it. And I can teach anybody who understands how to do the work. But it's really hard to teach a worker how to really believe in the larger values of what we do in this profession. So I like to start with the person and then teach them the skills and just keep creating believers, you know? Yeah.
So, I mean, that gets to a point of who do you hire? So do you hire the person that comes in with the best resume that day one, they could step in and do the job. They have all the skills and they've done it for years. Or do you hire the person that has an aptitude that seems really well aligned? I'm thinking about Southwest Airline. I think their former CEO was named Keller. And he talked about how they hired people that were going to be great at customer service because they could teach them the stuff of the job,
right.
But they
right.
couldn't teach that personality trait that they wanted. So where do you come down on that? Because
I think we are around people all the time in this profession. And I like to not, I mean, if there's going to be an opening, I know 10 people that can fill it somewhere around this country. And that's the way that works. It was funny. I get called often when friends of mine apply for director's jobs. And the last time it was a group in Columbus and a headhunter group in Columbus. And when the lady called, she said, I said, oh, who is it this time? Because I've spoke to her like 3 times. She said, no. Have you ever thought about being a recruiter? She wanted me to be, because of the people that we know that can put it. I said, no, not doing that. But I think that I urge students in my classes and I urge people when I talk, don't just sit there at the end of this, send an email, go up and shake somebody's hand and create relationships with people that are in influential positions within departments. Because when they learn who you are, that's going to really help you if you're good, you know. And so, I don't even know why you do a resume. I mean, that's terrible, and I don't mean that actually. But I mean, the resume gets you the job. And you would laugh. You need to record my interviews with people. And it's, you know, we've had some that were for regular jobs. And by the time it's all done, I said, okay, that's good. They didn't know that the interview started yet, you know? And then I had, when we hired our CFO, it was funny. That's a big job for us, as you know.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And so we had narrowed it down to 5 interviews. So I gave them one question and I said, Charles County Parks had $10 million worth of revenue 20 years ago. We had $20 million of revenue 10 years ago. Now we've got $40 million operating budget. We think it's going to be 80 in 10 years. What do you do? That was it. You got 2 hours.
Wow. That's awesome.
And that's it. I sat there and you should. And so what that's going to do, that's going to tell you the person that can communicate, mm-hmm. the person that it's thought. And when you have a $10 million budget, it's about counting money. When you have a $50 million budget, it's about strategy.
Yeah.
Financial strategies. So I wanted to see if somebody can get into those discussions, but I'm not a fan of, let me ask you one question, you give me an answer, ask you one. No. So, I love hiring. I love interview processes. I would love to teach that class, but at the end of the day, you're hiring people for an organization that fit. I'm really big right now in hiring people with special needs in parks departments. And I am thoroughly convinced that there's something in every department, something that people with special needs can do. And I've seen how that helps others. I've seen how it helps organizations. So, but that's a very different interview as well, you know? But I think that the days of sitting down and waiting for them to come to you, nope. If you're in a hiring position, you better know everybody around you and those that can come into your organization to make it better. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's switch a little bit to sort of the budgeting area. And in the Cotter analogy, he has the leader is focusing on setting direction, having a clear vision, clarifying the big picture. And on the management side, you are planning, you are establishing goals, you are allocating resources. And clearly, you know, a budget cycle comes around at least every year. And you know, you have to fill in the blanks, but how do you approach the filling in the blanks? You were just getting at your rising tide in Charleston County Park and Recreation Commission.
Yeah, the tide is rising, but we're the ones putting in the water. I mean, we're not asking people for more tax money because we're not going to get it. So it's by the enterprises that we develop is what's going to give us this additional revenue based on a plan. For me, I felt like my role was a support role to make sure that there was money dumped in to all the people that were out there spending it. And so I had two issues. One was the operating budget, and then one was the capital. And the interesting thing about agencies that I see nowadays is deferred maintenance. Everybody talks about deferred maintenance. I like to call it crappy budgeting, okay? And, you know, it's, what are you kidding me? You didn't think that thing was going to need a new roof in 10 years?
Of course.
And you've done nothing about it? It's like, we're at Charleston County Parks, we are ripping down the pier at Folly Beach, okay?
Oh my
gosh. And we're sticking up a new one. You want to know why? We got money. We've got a capital replacement program set up. We have, I don't know who's all listening to this. I don't really care. But we have $50 million every 5 years forever. My job was the big picture math. And if my wife's listening who teaches math, she'll laugh because I'm not a math person, but I understand money and finance. My role was to make sure that the debt service millage, the money coming in, was such that it would allow us to bond $50 million every 5 years. So how many helmets do you need? How many? I don't want to be in that room. I don't even want to be in that room. It goes back to the good managers that I told you about. But what I need to make sure is that they all understand, in order to keep this agency going, Tom, we've got to have this. And it's like the Germans. They're the best in replacement. This has a life, 20-year life. At the end of 20 years, rip it down and go again. And it's financial strategy, not so much budgeting for me.
So Tom, what you're describing is excellent budgeting, which I think falls within excellent management. And any organization could look at all their assets and should and say, okay, this roof is going to last 20 years. Let's create a spreadsheet to say in 20 years, will we have the money to replace it? And you can do that for any, you know, mechanical, physical, whatever.
Yes. Yes.
But you were just talking about a rising tide. So you have more resources, but we all know you never have enough. If you have 50 million, you have 200 million in need in terms of, you know, you are an ambitious person. You want your agency to do not one thing well, but everything. You want to solve all the world's problems. How do you approach that when that requires you to make choices?
Well, I think everybody's got to get something, you know? And the other thing that I think helps with multiple year budgeting, especially in capital, like the person in charge of a park that's wanted to add an element to their water park, for example, for the last 15 years, if you told them, okay, we're going to do it, but we can't do it until 2026, 2027, they're okay with that. because they know they're on that list for 2026, 27. Where the problem lies is when you say, we'll see. We don't have the money this year. We don't have the money that's crazy. You need to say, nope, you're never getting it. Or go 10 years out, show everything that's needed, and then put it in there. Now, I will say this, though, Paul, because I know that everybody listening to this podcast is not in situations like you and I were in. We have a lot of control in our budget. You know what else we don't have? We don't have a city administrator on our butt saying, hey, wait a minute, I got to buy 10 more police cars. COVID's taken $20 million out of my budget, and I can't believe you're going to ask me for this. So for those listening to that, what concerns me a little bit is I'm not so sure we've done a good job as a profession of teaching capital budgeting, bonding, those things to the people in charge. Because if they could walk into a city manager and say, hey, I noticed that the police station is coming off the list, the bonds will be paid off in 2026, and that you were making a $3 million payment on that $200 million building, all I need is $160,000 a year for 15 years, which doesn't sound like a lot, but if they understand that $160,000 a year is a $2 million capital project, then they might get that piece into the water park or something like that. But it concerns me of the directors that leave that knowledge up to the city administrator and don't come to director school or come to the places or revenue school or something where they're going to learn these things that are vital to being a manager in a city.
You know, one of the things I've learned and you learned too is any organization of a certain size has complication and idiosyncrasies to its finances. And there are multiple funds and they're dedicated to different purposes, and understanding all of that is really important. It's just like you were saying, and if you are in a city or a county, you should be a student of that budget because there are all kinds of interesting things. A lot of cities and counties, they have an end of the year surplus that can be used for one-time things, and there's less political pressure for those. So they can all provide opportunities, and a great deal of strategy, which isn't the main subject of this particular episode, but is of this channel, is understanding the environment that you're in and how to move through that environment to get what your objective is. And there's a lot to understand in the budget world. And who are the players? You know those people so that you can have those conversations.
Good point.
So where does providing the big picture, I know that you're a big picture person. How do you take that as a manager? So put yourself in that role of a facility manager, and how do you start incorporating more leadership attributes in your daily job of managing, which is an important job?
Yeah. I think that these concepts that big picture people and what I just explained in the budget, these actually are really easy concepts to grasp. But what you can't do is you can't exclude people from education in your agency. I think it's the role of a leader and management teams to almost have your own mini school within your organization. And when you do that, and it goes back to the annual calendar, you know, you figure out, here's what I want my senior staff to make sure they understand by the end of this year. This month we're going to do this. This month we're going to do that. And there's so much knowledge in these organizations that it works out better. I remember when Jim Garges was at Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, and Michael Kirschman was there with him at the time. And their budget, they were ordered to cut their budget in half. It was like, wow, we can. They said, oh, no, that's not the exercise. Go cut it in half. Well, they had to eliminate all training. So what they did was together, they just went up, we're going to do it ourselves. And they did some training themselves and they brought in some people. And I've been going up there. I actually went up again this year. And neither Jim or Michael are there. And they have their own in-house training. And wow, is it exceptional. But agencies need to do that. Leaders need to understand it's my role to train these people to do it. When I got my job at Charleston County Parks, it was a little difficult for me because there were minimum, and I'm not just saying this, there were 20 people there that could do that job better than me when I got it. And I got it. And I promised myself and I promised them, they will never, as long as I'm around, ever say, no, they're not ready for the job. They're going to be able to pick the leader from this group. And so, because I would mention that to people, what about that? Oh, he's not ready. What do you mean he's not ready? He's absolutely ready. And they were using smoke screens for other reasons. They didn't want to hire people. So what I would do, I would train them and then I'd bring them to every meeting. When it was commission meeting, time to talk about the smart things, I would shut up. They would stand up and they would do the talking so that they can have the credibility. But more than that, they would have the confidence of knowing they can handle the discussion. So I think the role then is in making sure you have your own in-house educational things done on a yearly basis of what you want to accomplish.
So Tom, that reminds me of the last podcast that we did where we were talking about the five levels of leadership. And one of them was investing in your staff and being that mentor. And when you do that, that creates a different kind of relationship, and it cements the group in a way that doesn't otherwise happen. So that's brilliant that you were investing in those people. It also is brilliant, the story you told about Charlottesville, Mecklenburg, about investing in what's important. So even though their budget was cut, many people would just say, oh, well, budget cut, what are we going to do? If it's actually important, you find a way to do it. And yes, a big part of leadership is prioritization. And so if this is the top priority, this is the top priority. And you and I both taught at Revenue Development and Management School at Ogilvy, a great place where people could come and learn entrepreneurial skills. You've also taught at the Director's School, which focuses on folks at the upper levels of our field, and you know, at the university level, at conference levels, at all those levels. Part of, I know why you invest your time and energy in that is because that's important. You don't do things that aren't important because there's limited money, but there's also limited time, which is the biggest limiting factor always.
Yeah. But Paul, every time I've spoken and every school I've worked at, I've gotten more than I've given in the relationships with people. And you meet these people like you have that change you, that you're so much better off by having had the opportunity to know them and meet them. And they become tremendous friends, colleagues, allies, and keeping them close is vital. It's really important.
So Tom, why don't we kind of wrap up this session on that subject of networking, and specifically why that's important for leaders? Because I think people in general think, okay, networking sounds good, but it seems a little fuzzy. Are they friends on your Facebook, which is different? Those are connections, but that's a different kind of connection than going to conferences, building out your LinkedIn. I was telling a young person I know recently that the cool kids, as in you and me, hang out on LinkedIn just to make them laugh. And my girls roll their eyes at that. But but at one level, it's, you know, take the term cool kids out. At one level, it's true. So Why do you think people need to network outside of just the people they interact with every day to hone their leadership skills and help them move up the leadership scale?
Yeah, I think that we don't know it all. And when you get a group of people together, it's amazing what comes out of there. It's there's so much we individually don't know. But for me, it's and I know this is not for everybody. It's my motivation. These people inspire me. I get an opportunity to say, you know, just in the back of my mind, oh my goodness, that's you're the most awesome person. And to see what they do, not who they are. You know, we're not allowed to use names, but like Malik Willoughby mm-hmm. from Columbus, who you know.
Yeah.
There's nobody like Malik in this world. Nobody.
He's remarkable.
And the Malik lets me be in his life. Yeah. And there's never been a time I haven't spoken to him or written to him where I haven't felt better about myself. But Malik's different because you want somebody that's going to push you a little, going to challenge you a little.
And if you look at what he does, I mean, he is a leader through.
There's no one like him.
Yeah.
No, there's no one like him. And he is changing his entire community there. He's the best that I know. And I know you're not supposed to rank, but you know what? He motivates me. And it's funny, I hear people talk about mentoring and all this stuff, and I want to throw up on my computer, you know. Mentoring a lot of time is like really old guys, men that like think they know what they're talking about. They want to take a 20-year-old to teach them stuff. That's not mentoring to me. I think, you know, you have a whole many types of mentors and you give and you take from each. I have so many, everybody I deal with is a mentor of mine right now. So those connections are important, very important. So that you could just stay current, know what's going on, and hopefully there's a lot of people struggling. But the other thing about networking that's kind of fun is, you know, helping people find the right job, be that person. You know, I get a lot of calls still, you know, I'm going to interview for another position. And can I talk to you a little bit about it? You know, and you know, what's so funny in those conversations, you don't tell them anything. You just reinforce the things they already know about themselves. But being a person willing to do that, I think is important. And when you're my age, I was almost at our age, but you're not up to me yet, but,
we're pretty close.
We owe it to the professionals, to the younger people in this field. I feel like I owe a debt of gratitude to give back. It's why I'm at Clemson. It's the favorite thing I do. And if I can help out people in this field, I want to be there for them.
So one of the things that I get out of networking is simply knowing the right person to ask the question. And sometimes in an organization, if you don't have the answer and the people immediately around you don't have the answer, you need to pick up the phone. And give a call to someone who does, or post something to your, you know, to your contacts on LinkedIn, or, you know, send an email to somebody. And when your network expands and you don't just know their name and their title and where they're from, but you know a bit about them and you know about their successes and challenges, then when you hit a similar one, you can call them up. And say, I need your advice. And you can grow so much with that. I was just thinking about just a couple of years ago, you had organized a group and we all met and we were in this beautiful cottage on the Potomac River, sitting out on the deck. And you intentionally don't have too much structure.
Yeah.
Just enough structure to get us together and get us talking. Yeah. But then you also understand the magic happens outside of that structure. in the conversations that happen and the ideas that flow from that. And we're all hearing those ideas and learning things. And we don't know. It may be a month later, it may be 6 months later, 6 years later, that all of a sudden, oh, we think, oh, I need that. And I know where to get it now.
Yes. Yeah. Well, that's the reason there didn't need to be a structure was look who was in that room.
Yeah, it was great. Okay. It was amazing.
I mean, these are the best in the entire profession. So, it's good to have those groups of people. I need Paul Gilberts in my life. You know, the structured, you know, the professionals, the ones that are going to have the right answer. And I need Malik's in my life. You know, I need spiritual leaders. I need, and I need all different types of people there. And it's an awesome responsibility, I think, to put yourself out there for people, but I think we owe it to them.
That's absolutely good. I think another factor that is a reason that leaders need to network is as you get higher in an organizational structure, there are maybe fewer people that you can confide with. And you find those others that are outside of your organization that can be your friends and mentors and help you along the journey. So,
and everyone out there is going to need that at some point.
And yes. Tom, I want to thank you right now for being that for me and for being that for so many others.
Thank you so much. And thanks for letting me be a part of this. This is great.
This is a lot of fun. Absolutely. So if you are listening to this podcast, which of course you are, if you're hearing this, please like, subscribe, comment, all those things. They're not so much to help you, but they're to help other people find this information. And if we are all moving forward and trying to figure out how to achieve more and better and make the world a better place through leadership and strategy, we need to share these ideas. And so help us spread the word. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you so much.
All right.